First, a conversation with psychologist Judith Wallerstein about her landmark study on the children of divorce. For almost three decades, Wallerstein followed the lives of 93 children whose parents divorced. Today, these kids are in their 20s and 30s. And Wallerstein's got some bad news. They're still carrying the scars from their parents' divorce.
According to conventional wisdom, if the two parents can deal with each other with civility, if they can settle the financial affairs justly, and if they can maintain contact with the child, then the child is home free. My study shows that that's not so, and this is a very dramatic finding. My study finds that the most powerful impact of the divorce occurs in adulthood, in their 20s, when the man-woman situation moves center stage, and when suddenly the ghosts and the memories rise from the basement and throw long shadows over their relationship. And although they want love, they want a lasting relationship, they want commitment, they are very frightened that they will fail. And they speak about that very openly. I mean, they say, I'm afraid to use the word love. You can hope for it, but you can't expect it.
In other words, the most mm-hmm. lasting effect of divorce comes when they face the same things their parents were facing at the time of the divorce.
Exactly. And they're afraid they're going to go down the same path. And that frightens them very much because they don't see their parents as the parents saw themselves, as maybe taking the most courageous road and, you know, looking for a remedy for a serious unhappy marriage. They see their parents as having failed at one of the major tasks of life. My mom couldn't hold a man, my dad couldn't stay with it, and so on.
Let's talk about some of the individual cases. You right. start the book with the story of Karen. Would you tell us her story?
Yes. Karen represents a large group of children who, when the family breaks, they move in to the breach to take a caregiving responsibility for one or both parents. Karen was 10 at the time of the breakup, and her mother really became very distressed following the breakup, although she was the one who filed for divorce. And Karen took over the care of her younger siblings, and Karen took over not only the running the household, but she took a very adult role in advising her mother about telling her mother that she shouldn't date Jim, she should date Harry. She essentially became not only mama's little helper, but in place of the mother in the household for many years. And I've seen this over and over again, and many people in my field, in the mental health field, are very worried about these youngsters because they see them as having given up their childhood and taking on premature responsibility as little adults.
Can you tell me, just because I'm curious, I guess, more than anything else, what the parents saw as the cause of their divorce?
Yeah, this is one of those instances, and there are many more than we think, where an outside crisis ricocheted into the marriage and led essentially to the divorce. It hadn't been a great marriage, but the children were protected and the children were well-parented. And then in a tragic accident, the maternal grandmother was killed. And the mother went to pieces and turned to her husband for support, for sympathy, for love, for more sex. And it's exactly what he never could deliver. I mean, the marriage that had its own equilibrium couldn't last under the greater demands of this troubled woman.
I'm curious also to know, I guess, whether Karen knew any of that or whether she saw it as an abandonment of her and her siblings.
If I tell you the story, I don't remember whether I put it in the book or not, because some of these stories are so chilling. Karen learned about the divorce when she and her younger siblings were sitting in the dark watching television, and the lights went out. I mean, there was some kind of a power failure, and the parents came in and said, we have something to tell you, and said, we're going to divorce. And the kids said nothing. They didn't know what to say. They were stunned. And then When the lights went on, Karen ran screaming into the night to a neighbor's house saying, "My parents are divorcing, my parents are divorcing." For most of the children in this study, and for most of the children that I see, the divorce comes as a surprise. And the great majority of children of divorce as adults say, "I don't understand it." And they add, "No one explained it to me."
What about some of the other stories of families you have followed? An opposite one, in a way, is that of Lisa, whose parents divorced but tried very hard to treat her needs as well as theirs.
I chose Lisa because she represents divorce at its best. She was the only child of two professional people. The father decided that the marriage was not what he wanted. He treated his wife very well. She treated him well. There was a lot of visiting back and forth. And Lisa also became eventually very fond of her stepmother. And yet, when I saw Lisa at age 30, 25 years later, she said to me, "I'd love to get married. And I think marriage is good, but I don't think marriage is for me. I will jinx. I know it. Any relationship that I get into, I would jinx."
This is, in some ways, the more chilling of the two stories. With Karen,
yes,
at least you
chilling.
Can expect it to be awful. But with Lisa...
You're quite right. It's more chilling because Lisa's a poster child for all that I and my colleagues have been recommending to the courts and the legal profession. Now, I'm not saying that people therefore should cut loose and fight and tear, and throw things, and I'm not saying that the child doesn't suffer when there's high conflict, but I am saying that at the end of the day, when it comes to being worried about failing in their man-woman relationships, these young people are not protected by what we've been telling parents they would be protected.
Yeah. Let's back up and talk about some of the other children that you have studied.
All right.
There are children from families who clearly needed to part. I've forgotten which one, Larry, I think, whose father beat his mother. Now, there was a case where clearly the father should have gone, right?
Absolutely. I'm not against divorce. I'm just trying to make a really good map. And we've never had this kind of a map before of what happens after divorce. I don't think that these people necessarily should have stayed together or whether they should have separated. I think that's an intensely personal decision that nobody can advise anybody else how to make. But Larry was a case where everybody would agree they should have divorced. His father was a violent man. His mother did have a lot of misgivings because she had strong feelings that a child should have a father. And finally, she decided to divorce. It took her several years to pull herself together, and often it does for a person who's been a victim for a whole lot of years. And during those critical years, what Larry felt is that the mother's behavior made no sense, and he was very attached to the father he regarded as very powerful. And although he felt very sorry for his mother, he did not feel that that was a justifiable reason for the divorce until he became an adult. And then he breaks free of this and realizes that his mother's course was the correct one, and he becomes a very interesting and a man with a real sense of integrity. But it takes him a long time to resolve the issue of not identifying with the powerful father.
How does this case compare to, say, the case of a family that was maybe not as violent but was unhappy and decided to stay together? Is there any indication that just staying together is better for the children?
There's no indication that just staying together is better for children any more than that just divorcing is better. It really depends what happens to the parenting, and not the parenting at the time of the breakup, but this is one of my main lessons, the parenting over the long haul. And that's a long time, since half of the children of divorce are 6 years old or younger. And people don't realize how demanding parenting is going to be in the post-divorce years when you're also looking for a partner, maybe a husband, maybe a wife, when you want to reestablish your social life has been entirely disrupted by the change in the from the family to the divorced family. And it's a superhuman task to reconstruct your life and at the same time to be a single parent. Even in joint custody, you're a single parent.
From all of this, then, where did you find the cases that give you the most hope for the children? Where did they see the best examples to follow when they reach adulthood themselves?
I think I would change that. It isn't where they found the best examples. Where they learned from their own experience, and many of them did, and I tell the stories of some of these young people who did, like Karen, like Larry, where they put together a vision, a really moral vision, and it was very interesting to me, based not on continuity with their parents, but based on a growing self-confidence in themselves and a real vision of what a loving relationship would be. And Karen says, I no longer want to just take care of people. I want a man who's my equal. I want a man who's a lover. I want a man who's a real husband. And I'm ready to stand on my own two feet. And I'm ready to take a chance on life. And we had a whole group of these young people who did that. And it's awesome. I think we've underestimated how much people can construct from within and from their own creative intelligence.
Judith Wallerstein is an expert on divorce and children. She's the author, along with Julia Lewis and Sandra Blakesley, of The Unexpected Legacy of Divorce, a 25-year landmark study.